A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com. Now, in Earth's darkest hour, he must fight them again.
Captain, Earth. Life signs?
Population approximately 9 billion. All Borg.
How?
Time travel.
They went back and assimilated Earth. Changed history. I must follow them back. Repair whatever damage they've done.
Hey there, and welcome to Rewatchability. It's the show where we rewatch old movies to see how they hold up over time. My name is Blaine Waters. With me, as always, is...
Commander LaRonde.
Okay. And...
I'm only a lieutenant commander.
McNabb.
J.M. McNabb.
And we are part of the Entertainment One Podcast Network. Before we begin all this, we want to shout out to our Patreons. Those are people that give us one, mm-hmm. $3, $5 a month.
Mm-hmm.
Think, you know, in the future, we won't need any money.
No.
Yeah. So send it all while you can.
Yeah, use it while you got it.
Use your life savings because it's going to be abolished soon.
Oh, God. You know, you might spend that money on a coffee. You know, you can spend it on a podcast that you listen to a lot.
Yeah.
You can go to Patreon.com/rewatchability for that. And we are going to talk about a Star Trek movie this week.
Why are you just saying it like that? You're not excited enough. We're talking about a Star Trek movie this week.
Woo!
Not just a Star Trek movie. We're talking about Star Trek First Contact, the best of the Next Generation movies.
Oh, is that what you're saying?
You haven't
better
seen
than
the
Genesis?
the one where Worf goes through puberty again?
You have to kill a lot of people. It's unfortunate. No, I see your point. It is kind of the best of the Next TNG.
This means a lot to a lot of people.
And apparently a lot to Robert LaRonde. Captain Robert LaRonde.
Commander.
When did you first see it, Rob? When did you first see this movie?
Well, I saw it in the theaters, Blaine.
Oh, yeah.
My family, we loved The Next Generation. We watched it together when it was on. It was like my favorite show growing up. And so the movies, I mean, they were like everything that I wanted. Like Star Trek Generations, I loved. It brought mm-hmm. together like the old Star Trek and the new Star Trek.
Right.
And, you know, also blew it up to sort of cinematic scope.
Yeah.
And so, like, I was damned ready for this one. And also it brought back the Borg, who are the most chilling Star Trek villain. And also we get to see Captain Picard be a badass.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
This isn't like, you know, oh, I'll stay in the bridge and, you know, drink my tea, Captain Picard. This is fucking like his sleeves are ripped off and his bicep is showing.
Yeah,
Captain
this is like
Picard.
Baryon Sweep Picard, you know, where he has to like take everyone down.
Starship Mine.
Yeah, it's a great episode.
So I loved this movie, and like it was my favorite of the Star Trek Next Generation movies growing up, and I loved it. So mm-hmm. I was really excited to talk about it again.
Well, JM, you brought this to us. This was your idea to do. So why was it?
Oh yeah. I should mention me and my friend Sina, who is going to be a guest on the show today, but he got a sniffle.
Right. In the future,
sure
that's taken care of.
Assimilated by the Borg?
Oh, shit. No, we're going to do a recap show for the new Star Trek Picard.
Oh, yeah.
Mm.
Because those are a thing. Though I always find those recap shows weird because people, you have to start them kind of before the show starts. I always wonder, like, how do people know, like, they're going to want to talk about Westworld every week before they've seen it.
Yeah. But, it could be awful.
Yeah. But I knew, you know, I'm a big Star Trek fan from years back. I knew this was going to be one I'm going to watch every week regardless. And my friend Sean is a big fan. So we're going to do a rewatch podcast. We've already done like an intro episode where we talked about some of our favorite Picard episodes, Starship Mine included.
Oh, nice.
And so you can find the podcast is on Apple Podcasts now.
Oh,
it's
sweet.
Called T. Earl Grey Hot Take.
Okay. That's the perfect name.
It's the perfect name.
It's the perfect name.
Yeah, so go check it out. Subscribe if you're going to be watching Picard. You can watch it alongside us, and you know we'll have a chat about it. But yeah, I wanted to do this one because I think this is like the best, other than maybe Generations, which I do like.
Yeah.
But I think it's the best Picard movie, and you know we'll get into all the reasons why. Like I think it's what I like about the Next Generation movies is they didn't just replicate the original series movies
right.
in the way that like the J.J. Abrams timeline does.
Right.
Like, they actually, you know, really crib scenes from those movies and try to kind of fit them into their new cast of characters. Whereas this, like, this is very much the Wrath of Khan, but Picard's Khan isn't a dude with a heaving chest. It's, you know, it's the Borg.
It's a lady with a cybernetic chest.
Exactly. So, yeah, I loved it. So obviously, I saw it in the theaters. I think I saw it opening day. And, yeah, it's probably my favorite, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Though it's not, you know, without its dated elements.
No. Yes.
Wait, yeah, why does she have a chest at all? Like, her like, human half is, like, from the clavicle up.
Yeah,
it's
so they're
weird.
Simulated
yeah.
breasts.
They're
but I mean, this is
breasts.
All about the Borg
Hollywood.
Trying to re-embrace their human side, right? So maybe they thought that that part of human sexuality was necessary,
right?
Or you know, Locutus wouldn't be interested.
Yeah, well, she does kind of seduce Data.
That's true.
Yeah,
he's into it.
Yeah,
goosebumps. What he just wants the goosebumps.
You must have seen it.
Yeah,
before,
I saw
yeah.
it. I saw it in theaters. I saw it with my brother, who is like the biggest Trekkie fan in the world.
But you're also the biggest Trekkie fan, aren't you?
No, I love Star Trek, and I watched it religiously when I was like a kid, and when it was coming out on TV, I loved the world of it.
But
and
you still love it, right, Blaine?
I like it. I feel like some like. Did you watch the newest series?
Discovery?
Yeah, Discovery.
I've watched some of it.
Yeah. It left a little wanting for me.
Yeah.
Especially because it was like serialized, but it still felt really episodic.
Right. But are you guys excited for Picard?
Yeah.
I'm like hopeful. I'm hopeful for Picard. I've known
some
people that like worked on it and stuff. And
you know people that worked on it?
Yeah.
Do you know Patrick Stewart?
He's my father. So.
Damn.
Yeah. So, like, I want to like it, and I feel like that's the worst place to be.
Right.
Like, I just want to like it so much.
Yeah.
That
I think I feel the same way.
I'm
also
worried.
Really want to like it. I
yeah.
feel like an emotional stake
yeah.
in this turning out well.
I know. And we were talking about it before, being like, maybe he's just on Earth the entire time. I'm like, yeah. Do that. Like, I don't care if they go to I just want, like, this old brooding Picard.
It's but just about his vineyard. It's just the ins and outs of running your own business.
I would love
business.
If it's, like, sideways in space. That's fine yeah. by me.
Yeah, one day perfect. There's a cold snap, and he's like, damn you, weather! What grapes! What beautiful grapes!
He just phasers into the field. Ah!
The line must be drawn here. Alfred Woodard talking him down.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So, yeah.
It's already gotten so nerdy. I'm sorry.
I know. Yeah. I loved Star Trek when I was a kid. And watching this in the theater was great. The moment very early in this when the needle goes into Picard's eye.
Oh, yeah.
Huge reaction in the theater. Like people going, oh, like gagging in the theater.
Well,
like it was almost like that problem child thing where like everyone starts throwing up and then everyone else starts like I expected that to happen when that
it pushes in his like lens.
You know, it's so bad the cornea bends.
Ooh.
It's so gross.
Yeah, that also reminds me, I didn't say like everyone was super hyped when I saw it. It was like packed. It was like Star Trek was super popular.
Yeah.
Whereas when I feel like when I saw Nemesis, there were like three other people in the theater. No one cared.
Yeah. I don't know what happened between that movie and Nemesis because, like, yeah, Star Trek was huge. And then it seems like Star Trek Nemesis, they sort of like just quietly released.
Yeah. Well, even Insurrection, I wasn't good, but I don't remember it being like a disappointment. Like, I don't think people were hyped for it.
Yeah.
I don't know what happened.
But that was like the slow step down, I feel. You know?
Yeah.
Like, this was, like we're saying, the pinnacle of the TNG movies.
Yeah.
It really did reach that. Like, what do you do beyond the Borg after this?
Yeah.
Not good. That's what you do after this. So, Rob, do you want to run down the movie for people that maybe haven't seen First Contact, haven't made First Contact with this film?
I will engage.
The listener?
Yes.
Okay, great.
So it starts with an eye, Picard's eye, with the drill thing, because Picard is having a flashback. He has PTSD.
He's done a lot of acid. Oh, yes.
Because if you remember, if you watched the original series a long time ago.
The original second series.
Yes, the original second series.
The new original series.
There was a special two-part episode sponsored by Crystal Pepsi where Captain Picard was temporarily turned into a Borg.
Mm.
And as we start this movie, it seems like he's still not over it. Like, he's still having some, like, Borg-y issues.
Yeah, for, like, the first time ever, though. Like, he's never flashed back to that, even in the series or, like, in the Genesis. Like, we never really see that.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, this kind of comes out of nowhere 10 years later.
Well, Star Trek is
Generations,
such...
Generations, you mean.
But, like, we don't see his going into his head over the Borg.
Yeah.
We don't see that in Generations or like in the end of the show.
That would be great if there was like an episode that had nothing to do, like he was fighting the Romulans. He's like, you know what? I just can't deal right now. I'm still dealing with that Borg shit.
Yeah. It is weighing on me.
Yeah.
God.
I need to self-care. Stat. Yeah. But he's having a hard time. And it also, coincidentally, this is the time that the Borg have finally decided to just attack all of Starfleet.
Mm-hmm.
And he thinks that he should be out there, you know, fighting. But Starfleet has ordered him to go and patrol the neutral zone because they think, well, he was a Borg once.
Right. He'll turn on us kind of thing.
Basically. Yeah.
Despite the, like, 10 plus years that have happened in between.
Yeah, he's fought the Borg.
Yeah. It's
and
kind
hasn't
of
had
insulting.
Any flashbacks. Like, come on, man.
Yeah, but can you blame them? I mean, maybe we learn in the episode that, or in the movie, sorry, it feels like an episode.
It does,
that he still has some hang-ups about this that are affecting his reason.
Yeah, and actually, you know what? I did say it would be funny if he was still hung up about the Borg. But one thing I do like that they do on the show after the Borg episode is they have that episode Family where he goes back to Earth and visits his brother who burned to death in Generations.
Oh, my God, yeah.
But, like, I do like that they took that. So I feel like the idea that he's been affected by this was always kind of baked into the character.
Yeah.
And I think, like, because he's also, isn't he hearing, like, the voices of the Borg? As just before this battle, like,
yeah, I think sometimes he picks up a stray Wi-Fi signal.
He has like a filling that catches radio every once in a while. Yeah.
Exactly. But so they're all in the neutral zone. Well, the Borg are attacking Starfleet and they're just sort of listening on the radio. Well, basically all of Starfleet is wiped out.
Yeah, it's not nice.
It's also not dramatically interesting, but...
That's why he turns it off. He's like, this is boring.
This is boring. Let's go on one of those holodeck mysteries, shall we?
Computer, play Beastie Boys.
But he decides, you know, he's not going to take this shit lying down. He's got to put himself into the fight. So he goes to Earth. Mm-hmm. He defies the orders of Starfleet and drives the ship
because
to Earth.
Because those guys are already dead, probably.
Probably.
Yeah.
Picks up Worf on the way because... We can't have a Star Trek Next Generation movie without Worf.
Yeah, you got to get the team back together.
Yeah, I can't remember what happens in the other two movies, but it gets really painful how, because obviously Worf goes to Deep Space Nine.
Yeah.
In the interim between movies, so they have to keep kind of contriving ways for Worf to join up with his old crew.
Surprise, I was in your closet the whole time.
It's your birthday. That's why I came here to surprise you.
I haven't felt bad because when they pick him up, Captain Picard says, we could use your help with tactical. And then he just relieves some guy. And if I was that guy, like, I just wanted that guy to be like, I'm trying my best.
God, it's really hard to get here. Yeah. You don't know what it's like. Well, I guess you do. But so they go to Earth and just in time to see the Borg cube attacking the planet. Mm-hmm. And see, this is where Captain Picard knows what he's talking about, because he's the only guy who knows exactly where to aim all the phasers on the Borg ship.
Yeah, right in the crotch. Right in the crotch of the Borg.
That's in the space balls.
Yeah. Hit them there, boys.
In video games, there's usually like a glowing jewel or something like that.
Right, exactly. Hit them in their glowing jewels. Oh, God.
So he does that, and the ship explodes, but not before sending out this orb, this Borg sphere.
They can do other shapes.
Watch out for the Borg pyramid. That's going to blow your mind. But then that thing sort of does something really crazy. It's not really crazy. It happens basically in every second Star Trek movie. It rips a hole in the time-space continuum.
Yep.
And then goes back in time to some period in Earth's past. Mm-hmm. Now, they blow up the Borg sphere.
Right. You got it.
But while that happens, Riker and most of the crew goes down to the Earth's surface.
Yeah, and they realize that the Borg have hit the base where Zefren Cochrane...
Wait. No. Wait. They have to...
Captain Picard goes down.
This ship used to be a nuclear missile. It is an historical irony that Dr. Cochrane would choose an instrument of mass destruction to inaugurate an era of peace.
It's a boyhood fantasy, Data. I must have seen this ship hundreds of times in the Smithsonian, but I was never able to touch it.
Sir, does tactile contact alter your perception of Phoenix?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Captain Picard goes down first, but the Borg start infiltrating the ship because it turns out they must have teleported in while the shields were down,
right,
or something like that.
Mm-hmm. They tease it out that the Borg have been, because I remember the first hints that anything is going on as Geordi's like, we got to do this. And he's like, and you know, check the thermostat. It's warm in here. And you're like, that's weird. Why would they put that in the movie?
Yeah.
Well, it comes back later because, yeah, the Borg are secretly there. And they like it a little warmer. You know those coworkers that are always fiddling with the temperature?
Borgs.
It's really annoying. Those are Borgs.
Yeah, that's true. You the might... humidity, too.
I wish they had primed us in like every other movie. Geordi is just saying inane shit all the time. And you just never pay attention. It's like...
Or he's like, it's cold in engineering.
Yeah, exactly. He's always complaining about the temperature. That's his character trait. Yeah.
And something with eyes. I don't know.
Well, he has eyes in this movie.
He does have eyes. Yeah. Which is like mechanical. Feels good for him.
Yeah. You can like zoom in and stuff.
I don't know if it's true, but on the internet it said like LeVar Burton had been asking for years to be like, it's the future. Can't Geordi just have some robot eyes so I don't have to wear this goddamn thing?
Yeah. Well, they were afraid to give him robot eyes because then he would have too much blackmail sexuality.
Right. Yeah. For those that don't know, that's what he said. He thought that he criticized the writers for making Geordi a brilliant engineer but never able to speak to a woman.
Well, how is he going to get a date when there's like this freaking visor over his eyes?
That's true.
That's not romantic. You can't look into those baby gold bars.
Take your glasses off. No. Put them back on. There's still light coming from under the door.
Yeah. But basically, there's like two situations happening. Like, Riker and most of the crew is down on Earth. And they are at this particular moment in time where humanity is about to make first contact like the title of the movie, with an intelligent civilization because they test their warp drive and then it gets noticed by the Vulcans and that leads to everything that we know and love about the Star Trek universe. The utopian times come because of this moment in history.
Yeah. I remember that they like saw his ship and that they brought the ship into their ship and that's how he made first contact. No, he just goes up and comes back down and the aliens land, right? And they just know about the fact that mankind has warp because of the warp signature that was left in the atmosphere or whatever, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Doesn't the Enterprise has warp? Why don't they just blast their warp and then leave? Would solve everything. They wouldn't need to do anything.
Well, I mean, I think they want to preserve the timeline as much as possible. They need to help that guy do it because that guy else becomes like a historical figure as they talk about.
He could have been the guy that shook their hand.
But I mean, the crazy part is that Vulcan ship like cruises right past the Enterprise.
Yeah. like that's weird.
Isn't that a?
Yeah.
Yeah. They don't have windows in the Vulcan ship.
Oh, okay.
So the guy by their ears, but. Yeah, so Z from Cochrane, he is the guy who is supposed to be doing the first warp flight. And that guy is played by the great, blanking on his name right now.
James Cromwell.
James Cromwell, who, of course, has given us, you know, tons of prime ministers and presidents and learned people. Yeah. And also we have Alfre Woodard.
She's a great actress.
She is. Yeah. They have floated her as possibly being nominated for the Academy Award this year.
Yeah.
Of course, she didn't get it because she's black and she wasn't playing like Harriet Tubman.
Right.
Oh, God, the Academy Awards. Anyway, we won't talk about that right now.
But while
she wasn't playing Harriet Tubman or the Joker.
But while all of this stuff is happening, while they are trying to make sure that the historical record actually happens, that they go off and do this flight, everybody up on the ship has to basically try to survive the Borg intrusion. So there's a whole bunch of people who are stuck in sick bay, including Alfre Woodard, because she is – they bring her up because she gets knocked out or something like that.
She has a radiation poisoning.
Yeah, from the warp core.
Yeah. So it becomes very quickly like a siege situation, like, you know – Captain Picard, right away, he gets into battle mode. He takes off his, like, you know, his thing, and he puts on, like, a badass vest.
Yeah, which is very reminiscent of that, like, episode, except he has a phaser gun instead of, like, a crossbow, which was pretty badass.
Yeah.
I didn't think it looked that bad. It kind of looked like when Santa Claus takes off his, like, outer coat. He's got, like, a little vest thing underneath.
Like a waistcoat.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
I mean, it gets badass. I guess. Well, they also have like the phaser rifles.
Yeah. They only bring those out when it's like, you know, the real
business. Yeah. Because they did it on the show sometimes when, things got intense.
Mm-hmm.
But what does that do that the other ones don't? Because at one point he says.
It doesn't shoot faster. It doesn't shoot harder.
Well, he says at one point, like, because the phaser, like, at its maximum setting can disintegrate you.
Yeah.
What does the other one do more than that?
It disintegrates you harder. Yeah. Like, it really disintegrates.
Just, you just feel more pain as you go.
It takes a long time.
Yeah.
It's like 24 hours of disintegration.
Oh, yeah. It's like that phaser that Saul Rubinek had in that one episode he was in.
Right. Yeah. But while they're trying to retake the engine room, they capture the Borg, capture Data. They capture him by, like, you know, yoinking him through the bottom of a closing door.
It was like a scene from Critters or something. Like this weird B-movie sci-fi.
Yeah.
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 So he's gone. He's captured. He's in there. But he also says when we first see him that they can't do anything to him.
No.
Like, if they're going to torture him for the code to break the Enterprise – they're not going to get it because he can't be, you know, manipulated by the Borg.
No, that's right. But they're not going to manipulate him using classic hacking techniques. They're going to manipulate him using the oldest hacking technique in the book. Sex.
A low-cut mechanical dress.
Yeah. Because this is, I think, also where we're introduced to the big baddie of this movie, which is the Borg Queen, which is sort of like the next generation of Borg. Because we've seen the Borg. We've seen the Borg with their, like, vacuum tubes, you know, attached to their bodies, and they're wearing too much, like, pasty makeup, and There's like bits of little toys glued to their faces.
Bits of whatever Star Trek merch didn't move.
Yeah, that's right.
The Paramount has.
But it's like all these dolls just under their faces.
But this is a whole different beast. I mean, first of all, this is a lady Borg, I mean, granted, it's hard to see the Borgs and all of their, you know, cybernetic appliances, but it seems like most of the Borgs are kind of dudes.
Yeah. It's a real sausage party, those Borg ships.
Real sausage party. Assimilate some women, huh? Yeah. But also,
they're all Oscar voters.
But also, she not only is a woman, but she's different. She, like, it seems like she's just like a top part with like a spinal cord, and then she pops on to like this body.
She's very Terminator-esque as well.
Right.
Yeah. She has like the she has the mechanical metal head underneath all her stuff too.
Yeah, and also like the Borg, she's not cold and unemotional. She seems to have she apparently has desires.
Yeah, I remember it being like subtly sexual, but she like literally says to Data, "Was it good for you?" And it's not subtle at all.
Are you familiar with physical forms of pleasure?
If you are referring to sexuality, I am fully functional, programmed in multiple techniques.
How long has it been since you've used them?
8 years. 7 months, 16 days, 4 minutes, 22.
Far too long.
Well, I mean, they kiss at one point, too. Like, it makes you wonder, is the title First Contact a double meaning?
Mm. Oh.
An entendre. Mm-hmm. Well, not for Data, because,
Data says he's fully functional.
Oh, that's true.
He is.
But he's already done it with Tasha Yar. Right?
In the second episode.
Yeah.
Like, tease it out a little. Like,
he's like the James Bond of robots, because she dies, like, a few episodes, like, later on, right? The only person he ever...
Yeah, I think there was some time passed, but yeah. Right. And plus, he's not the James Bond of robots. He hadn't had sex since then, and he knows he's been counting down the minutes.
Yeah.
Well, there was...
I've had some dry spells, but I've never had to count down the minutes.
She does ask him, when was the last time you did it? And he gets it down to the second, so that's pretty funny.
I do love Brent Spiner's acting in this, and I think also, like, throughout all of this movie, he's very good at, like, playing the unemotional part and then, like, just letting the sort of emotions bubble through, like the sarcasm or the uncomfortable, the awkwardness.
Yeah. He's so good as Data with a chip. Like, he's good at as Data, and he got a lot of accolades for that, obviously. But, like, with Data with a chip, he's on another level.
Yeah. And he can turn it on and off.
Yeah.
It's a change from the last movie where he couldn't control it.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
He deserved to be more than just a scientist and Independence Day, you know? He deserves more than what he got, I think, as an actor.
He was in the Independence Day sequel, too, though, like, but he was really bad, wasn't he?
I can't remember.
Yeah.
He wasn't like, bad in that movie?
Yeah. He has, like, a web series or something.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
And he's going to be on the new Picard.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I guess, like, a few of our old friends will be showing up, right?
Yeah.
Hopefully.
They're my only friends. That's why I'm so excited about the show.
I got to get my mom to send back my action figures.
Oh, my God. I still have mine. They're at my house.
Yeah? Are you going to get them all ready for the Picard show?
You're just going to watch the Picard show with them?
Not a terrible idea.
Yeah. Set them all up.
You know what? I actually bought, like, a few years ago, I bought the Bridge playset.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Because I just decided that I wanted it, and I got it on.
Like, I have enough money, I'm going to do that.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't expensive, but it was still, like, new in the box. I don't think they're collector's items in the same way some other franchises have become that, but it's great. I love it. I put it all together, and then
you took it out of the box?
Took it out of the box. I put it all together, put all the toys in it, and then realized that it took up way too much space. My wife was going to kill me, so I had to take it all back all apart and put it in the basement where it is now.
Where we used to podcast.
That's right, yeah. It's now the Bridge of the Enterprise.
Well, yeah, I mean, in retaking the Enterprise, they have to do a bunch of stuff. Like, Captain Picard and Worf go out onto the outside of the Enterprise in order to stop the Borg from installing this communication device that would let them communicate with the future. Yeah.
I remember that being mind-blowing at the time.
It looks really good still, I think.
Yeah.
A lot of the, like, backgrounds and all the space stuff, I think, still looks, like, pretty impressive.
I thought it did.
Yeah.
No? Yeah.
I just feel like, why did they destroy it then? If it communicates the future, wouldn't you want that as Starfleet? Like, why did you have to blow it up? It was fine. You just disconnected it.
I don't think it communicated with the future. I think it communicated with the Delta Quadrant, where the Borg that were around
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, so and that's call the Borg earlier before Starfleet got a start. That's good.
That's the other thing we should mention is this movie happens after Voyager had already started. So we get like a few Voyager shout-outs. There's the EMH doctor.
The doctor, yeah. Robert Picardo. Yeah.
And there's the guy – I mean, this isn't – like an in-universe shout-out. Yeah. Yeah, the guy who plays Neelix is the maitre d' in the holodeck.
Yeah. Right.
They put a mustache on him. He's like, he's a different character now.
We should probably talk about that scene. I still don't understand the logic of that scene. Like,
it felt like the casino planet in Last Jedi.
Right.
It was just like, why go here? Right. Like, what's happening?
Visually they just wanted to break it up or something. But like, they're on the ship. There's a whole bunch of Borg. The Borg they just leave you alone unless you're a direct threat. Captain Picard, for some reason, decides
I'm going to antagonize them.
Yeah, I'm going to shoot. I mean, I guess he's angry, but still, he shoots his phaser at them, antagonizes them, hides in the holodeck. Well, first he loads his Dixon Hill program.
Yeah, because if he's going to be in the holodeck, he at least wants to have his stories.
Yeah.
I recorded this. I'm going to watch it.
But he doesn't just go in there to like get a weapon to shoot them. Him and Alfre Woodard full-on change into a tuxedo and an evening dress.
Yeah.
Can you imagine if you were Alfre Woodard in this situation, you wake up in, like, the future, and he's like, oh, by the way, we're going to go into this room that's the past?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know.
And all of a sudden you're undressing in front of an old British man you just met?
Yeah. And he angrily murders people in front of you?
Yeah.
That look a lot like this other guy that he was just friends with?
Why not just replicate a Tommy gun?
I know.
And how does he turn off the safety protocols?
He never says anything. Mm. Oh, it's so weird.
I don't know. But the gangster in the holodeck program is Donna's dad from that 70s show.
Right. Oh, yeah. Cool. He's in Curb Your Enthusiasm, too.
Right, yeah. There's another cameo. Adam Scott is
also... Yeah. I noticed that.
I don't think that's so much a cameo as that was what Adam Scott was working.
Yeah, he was... Yeah.
1996.
Star Trek.
Yeah.
Yeah. On the surface, they are trying to get the rocket launch for the time when the rocket launch is supposed to happen. But the problem is that Cochran, he is having a hard time with all of these expectations with the legacy. And like, you know, for example, like Geordi LaForge like completely fans over him in the way that Donald Glover was worried that he'd fan over LeVar Burton in Community.
That's great. That's a good connection. I love that.
So
Geordi ruined that situation like it was a date on a beach in the holodeck.
Poor Geordi.
Yeah, and like at one point, Cochran actually runs away and gets drunk, and they have to like shoot him with a phaser.
When isn't Cochran getting drunk?
Yeah,
he loves booze, and he loves that one Roy Orbison song.
Yeah,
and a Steppenwolf song.
Yeah, and the classic rock
song. Yeah. But eventually, they're ready to do the thing, and so the day of the launch comes and they get in there.
I love that this ship has three seats. So it was always going to fly with two other guys, right? And so apparently those people have been murdered by the Borg.
Yeah.
Zefren Cochran doesn't mention them by name at all.
No.
Doesn't feel sad that they're not there.
This one's for Timmy.
Yeah, he doesn't pour one out.
Was Alfre Woodard supposed to be one of them?
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe Alfre. But like there's still that.
She's written out of the history books
still
now,
like Michael Collins there. It's supposed to be not there. Anyway.
Yeah. So they launch, and they're getting ready to do the thing. First, it's a rocket, conventional rocket, and then after that, the sort of nacelles come out, and then they're going to do, like, the classic warp drive sort of thing. Except Data, he has been so perverted by this Lady Borg who has used her sexuality against him also given him, like, a little patch of skin, which, you know, makes him real tingly.
Yeah.
And on his face, too.
And his face.
Right, that's right. He looks like the reverse Phantom of the Opera.
Yeah.
Or a reverse Borg. basically. He's got like the skin
over
the eye.
Where else did they give him skin? That's what I'm wondering.
First contact.
First contact.
Second or third contact.
And even Captain Picard, this is the point where he's gotten into the engine room and like he has confronted the Borg Queen and he's been like, hey, I know that you want me and that is why that you're here and all of that. And yeah, if you want me, I guess I'll can have a thing. I'll be Locutus. We'll do your thing. I'll move back in. But she's like, I got a new man.
Yeah, that's Data.
Yeah.
I like how
it'd be great if she just had like a cardboard box, be like, you left some stuff behind after we assimilated you. Like,
my copy of Moby Dick.
These are my hand attachments. Thank you very much. I love how he's like willing to sacrifice his life for his friend, Data. Whereas two scenes ago, he called his other friend a fucking coward.
You have your orders. I must object to this course of action.
Your objection is noted.
With all due respect, sir, I believe you are allowing your personal experience with the Borg to influence your judgment.
You're afraid. You want to destroy the ship and run away. You coward.
Jean-Luc.
If you were any other man, I would kill you where you stand. Get off my bridge.
Well, that's his feelings. Like, that was his moment
you,
of dark, you know.
Yeah.
Because Picard knows that he should have done the right thing. He should have blown up the Enterprise and, you know, abandoned ship, and that would have been it. But he wasn't thinking because he had all of this
I just feel
PTSD.
Like Worf gets the short end of the stick all the time.
But he apologizes after. He's like, you are the most courageous person I have ever served with.
Mr. Worf, do you have a British accent?
Yeah. Worf puts his, like, batleth away. He's like, okay, I don't have to murder you
now. I will kill any man on his spot.
Yeah, he's always getting the, you were about to say
the supercut?
The supercut of just Worf getting shit on the entire time. No, Worf, you stupid Worf. It seems just like a bullying.
What's the matter with you?
It's like a bullying PSA. It's awful to watch.
But he was right here.
Yeah.
He just got that apology.
Okay, he was right. Finally, Worf gets his comeuppance.
Yeah, and but Data was just kidding about going along with the Borg Queen because he loves Captain Picard. And so he, like, you know, busts the engine thing, and then all of this, like, solvent gas comes and dissolves the organic matter. And Captain Picard has to, like, climb the hoses in a very, like, you know, it seems like somebody his age shouldn't be doing that sort of activity.
It seems like someone his age didn't do that activity is what it looks like.
Yeah.
It, like
there's two grips holding each of his legs.
Oh, man. Totally. Like, every shot is him from, like, the nipples up kind of thing. He's like, I can barely raise my arms above this. Like, you better be holding me.
Yeah, he looks in pretty good shape.
Yeah, he does look in pretty good shape.
He's a little ripped,
He's in better shape than any of us.
That's true.
He's an old man.
That's true.
He would punch my lights out.
Four lights.
The four lights out.
Yeah, and then the Borg Queen is, you know, dissolved, and he, like, snaps her spinal cord, and that's the end of the terror.
Yeah.
And the ship does its warp thing. The Vulcans see it, and so they come on down, and of course, Zefren Cochrane can't do the Vulcan V hand sign.
Right.
So he just does a put her there.
Mm-hmm.
And the future, the utopian, beautiful world that we've all created is insured.
Yeah.
How do they get back?
Oh, they just go through the same hole they came through. but they said that they had to get through it when they initially went through it because it was closing. And then in the end, they just went back through it.
Yeah.
I was like, weird. Yeah, that was a part of the script they just dropped.
Like, shouldn't they have to fly backwards around the sun or something?
Yeah.
Well, we'll get into that and more when we get back from these messages.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome back. This is Rewatchability. We're talking about First Contact.
Yes.
And Data's first contact with people.
He had sex with Tasha Yar.
Yeah, I guess.
And he had a girlfriend in that one episode.
The one episode. Poor Data. No one's doing it in the future. That's the shitty thing about the future.
Star Trek is like surprisingly non-sexual.
Yeah. Like I always thought like Barclay using that holodeck, I was like, that's what everyone would be doing.
Oh yeah.
That's the only reason VR is a thing for like VR porn.
I'm sure I've written this before as a joke, but like the worst job in the Enterprise is whoever has to clean that holodeck at the end of the day.
Just transport it out. Just put it right into space.
Oh, actually, they might do that because that's why. Because I years ago I wrote a thing about all the crazy stuff that happens on Star Trek, and one of the craziest to me is how the holodeck's always like breaking down and like killing people. And the reason it can kill people is because like all the food it creates is replicated and stuff, so people can eat.
Okay.
So to get rid of all the sort of food waste and stuff like that that it creates, the holodeck has a feature that it can basically like destroy everything inside of it. Just vaporize it or something.
Yeah,
so that's
how
if there's a hiccup, it could kill everyone inside of it.
Jesus. Yeah, I always thought it was weird that they had like one bathroom on the Enterprise too. Like that's a famous foible in the construction of the Enterprise.
There's like two actually.
Oh, okay. There's one in Captain Picard's quarters probably.
There's one on the bridge, which is really funny because they put it in the technical manual
or something. That's what I'm referring to. Yeah.
But like when they're shooting the show, they don't really think about that. So you can see on the show sometimes people go into through the doors that we now know are the bathroom.
And then enter like zipping up.
Just light a candle in there, would you? We're trying to take on the Borg here.
Like in the
have to smell that?
In the middle of a Romulan firefight. Like, I'm just going to excuse myself.
Yeah, but I always thought it was because like when you're like beaming everywhere, they just like beam the poop out of you.
Well, no.
That's what I thought. You just beam all the excrement.
What if they beamed your colon out?
Well, they have to put it all together. They do more sensitive beaming than just beaming stuff out of your stomach.
Wasn't that? There's also like a theory that like the transporter isn't a transporter. It basically like duplicates you and kills you, like the Prestige or something.
Yeah. Well, that's the only way it would work. Otherwise, like little particles are being transported through space, like on a tractor. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's very weird. Anyway, sorry, JM, you have some trivia for us.
Yeah, I've got some trivia.
Okay.
In the first draft of the script, or one of the early drafts of the script, they didn't go back to the 21st century.
Okay.
What time period did they go back to?
I don't know, but I'm just going to say something wild. Ancient Rome.
Not too far off.
Shit.
Ancient Greece.
My first thought
further off than that.
Was going to be like when we first made it to the moon. But if that's not close, then I don't know. Jesus' time?
No, the Renaissance.
Oh, the Renaissance.
And it was going to be called Star Trek Renaissance. And Data befriends Leonardo da Vinci in this version of the story.
Damn. Perfect.
That didn't happen, though.
Didn't Janeway have a thing with holographic da Vinci?
Yeah, it was John Rhys Davies, wasn't it?
Oh,
wow.
Yeah.
I think. I don't know.
So I'm glad that didn't happen.
Yeah.
That would have been a bad episode of Star Trek to begin with. And then, like, I kind of like the time travel Star Trek episodes, but for a whole movie to be in one time period that doesn't feel like the future, like, I like that they went back in time but was still in the future.
Well,
they were still in universe instead of in our past, you know?
But also, it feels like meaningful to go back in time to this particular point because it sort of is the origin of the world as they sort of propose it. So like to go back to like a weird portion of the Renaissance might be fun in like, hey, it's a fish out of water. Ah, these crazy 23rd century people don't know how to use 16th century Italian toilet holes. But the fact that they go back to this moment and this moment becomes such a big part of the movie is sort of what makes the movie in a way.
Totally. And we can explore more of the Star Trek universe and the Star Trek lore that we've heard about.
Well, it also.
That's Data's brother. He's not in this one.
But it also brings us back to what Star Trek was originally about, the awe of exploring the universe.
Yeah.
And to represent it's powerful
that's
when they do it here.
Point.
The Renaissance, nothing fucking good happened in the Renaissance.
Overrated. Yeah, I also do like the idea, like there's a great two-part Deep Space Nine episode that explores this, but basically that just before the utopian future of Star Trek, like right around now.
Oh, yeah, the Third World War.
Yeah, the Third World War is basically like Earth is a hellscape.
Yeah.
I don't know. That tracks.
Well, they mentioned that in this movie, too. Like this, I thought it was interesting how like they place this, and then there's a bunch of supposed history that's happened between now and the Z from Cochrane time that have totally changed everything, like something Eastern Alliance, like, you know, it is like the post-apocalyptic future, just people have kept living.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's like why Picard says at one point, like, all my crew is going to go down to Earth and live in some like backwater part of North America to live out their lives and try not to interfere with history.
Yeah.
Because so many people have died that you can do that. Yeah. That's terrifying.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
Jonathan Frakes directed this movie.
What?
Yeah.
It was his first movie. He directed a bunch of TV episodes. I think he did some Voyagers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He's directed a lot of TV. From what I could tell, he's only directed two other theatrical feature films. Can you name those two other films? Non-Star Trek ones.
Oh, non-Star Trek.
Star Trek theatrical films.
Was one of them Thunderbirds?
Yes, one of them was Thunderbirds.
Oh, yeah.
Thunderbirds or go!
The non-puppet version of Thunderbirds?
Yeah.
Oh, damn.
Why are you afraid of puppet freaks? Puppets.
Yeah, I have no idea what the other one would be. You got any guesses?
No. Nope.
I'll give you a clue.
Beyond belief, fact, or fiction, the movie.
Fiction. I'll give you a clue. It was sort of like a teen-centric riff on a old Twilight Zone episode.
Oh.
It also involved time.
Like Clockers or something? Or?
Close. That was like a
Time Stoppers
movie.
Or something?
Yeah, oh, close.
What is it? Clockstoppers.
Clockstoppers.
There we go. Yeah. Yeah, I can like picture the poster.
Yeah, yeah. Starring Jesse Bradford.
Mm.
Okay, last question. Okay. What Star Wars cameo is in this movie?
Oh.
The two don't often mingle, but...
Never. Never the twain shall
meet. Not necessarily a person.
Is it the Force?
Yeah. It's an all-living thing. So technically, cameos in every movie.
Oh, I know what this is.
Okay.
There's a Star Trek toy, which is repurposed as part of the Borg's outfit.
Wait, what?
Star Wars toy?
That was a joke we just made earlier.
Yeah, but it's really true. Like,
what, really?
Yeah, there's like literally a Millennium Falcon as part of somebody's eye.
Oh, no.
Or a TIE fighter or whatever.
Maybe that's a different thing, or maybe you're getting confused with the fact that the Millennium Falcon is in the battle scene at the beginning.
Oh.
And the reason for that is very tiny. You would never notice it unless you zoom in on your DVD. But the reason for that is because ILM was in the process of doing the effects for the Star Wars special editions, which were coming out, I guess, like the following year. So they had a digital version of the Millennium Falcon for the first time, and they just threw it in the background.
We have an empty space in space.
Yeah.
And something.
I think J.J. Abrams did something similar. I think he put R2-D2 in one of the battle scenes in Star Trek.
Really?
Yeah. Well, that's because he doesn't like Star Trek.
Yeah. Apparently he doesn't like Star Wars
either.
Yeah,
what does he like, man? It's brutal.
I do want to say this isn't trivia, but one thing I wanted to talk about, I've never seen anything conclusive to prove this or any interviews with creatives that have confirmed this, but I heard this rumor somewhere, and I don't even remember where I heard it, but it totally makes sense to me, and that is that the whole Zefram Cochrane story where he's their idol, he put in motion everything that they love.
Oh, is Gene Roddenberry?
Was Gene Roddenberry.
Wow.
Because he's revealed to be this kind of drunk that they sort of lose respect for, and he's just not what they were hoping.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Gene Roddenberry famously was very hard to work with. He basically got thrown off of the Star Trek movies, which is partly, I think, why he started The Next Generation, because they wouldn't let him be involved creatively with the movies anymore.
Oh, wow.
But people found him very hard to work with on TNG, all these kind of limitations that the writers wanted to push that he wouldn't let them.
Luckily, he died.
Oh, God. So cruel.
I meant so that they could do the creative things they want. Yeah. That's what happened.
Yeah.
I mean, it is what happened, yeah. But, I mean, I thought that was interesting. I hadn't watched it since hearing that. And also, like, Cochrane is the first person to say Star Trek in a Star Trek.
Oh, yeah.
What that kind of ham-fisted line, though.
It is, yeah.
What, you guys are on some sort of Star Trek? Here, have
$5.
You'll see a Star Trek. It's just like the worst. It just sounded like an
They
old
were
man.
Little women.
Yeah. Gene Roddenberry, he was a cop, right, before he was a Star Trek writer. He, like, came up with the idea of this utopic. Is that true?
I don't know. I don't really know that much about him.
No, okay.
Other than this character might be based on him.
And he wrote the words to the Star Trek song, so he'd make a bunch of money.
That's true.
Oh, that's funny. And, yeah, and that, like, Lucille Ball, like, took a chance in this show. And, like, she was her production company.
On the original
company,
show.
Yeah,
on the original show. Yeah,
that's right.
Pretty fun.
And I did want to mention, while we're talking about Gene Roddenberry and the time travel of it all,
right,
they're one of the movies he kept pitching that they would never make involved, like, I can't remember exactly, but it was similar to First Contact, whereas it was the Klingons or someone went back in time and were kind of monkeying with Earth's history. Mm-hmm. And I think they saved JFK's life or something, which put Earth on the wrong path.
Oh,
and so, like, Spock had to go hide in the grassy knoll and shoot JFK or
something.
Yeah,
amazing.
Yeah, amazing.
That's why there were two shooters.
Yeah.
Spock was the other one. It's only logical, Jim. It's only logical. Is that right?
Okay, Gene Roddenberry was a cop.
There we go. The facts are in.
Wow.
There you go.
Space cop.
Space cop.
Well, they are kind of like the space police.
Yeah.
You know, it's like an idealized version of the space police. Like, in this utopian future, is it really going to be like the military force that is keeping everybody's freedom or whatever?
That's the thing that's weird about Star Trek, and especially doing like this other podcast and like thinking about it more critically. Like, it is weird that it's a utopia, but it's also like, yeah, essentially like a military force. Yeah. And like, it's the show that preaches progressivism and tolerance, but they also like, they're like, oh, the Ferengi, they're all so greedy. The Klingons, they're nothing but angry and irritable.
Man,
like, they're the most racist.
It's just colonialism, man.
Oh, it totally
Put another name on it. Slap a little badge.
They're just trying to get people in the Federation. Well, at one point, Alfre Woodard asks Captain Picard how many planets are part of the Federation. He says like 150 or something. So it doesn't even seem that many.
No, and they've been on so many planets that didn't know about the Federation. They've made first contact on so many planets.
Yeah, well, they're always violating the first directive or the prime directive or whatever.
Prime directive. It's called the prime directive. It's the only one.
Well, it's the only one they keep breaking.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, they like at one point they like decide to tell Cochrane about the future because they're like, you know, prime directive be damned, we have to like save this. But then they aggressively don't care about ruining his future. Riker's quoting himself to him.
Yeah, I love how he says to Riker, like, I hate hearing about myself. And then Riker quotes something to him and he's like, oh, that is wise. Who said that? And he's like, you. He's like, fuck you. I just said I hated hearing about myself.
Let me tell you about your first wife's death. No. What are you doing?
It's long and slow and painful. Stop. I can't get married now.
Oh, that's terrible.
Yeah. Oh, man. So what do you guys think about, like, is it still kind of the best TNG movie for you guys?
Oh, man. I have to be honest. I was really stoked to rewatch this, and I remember it being awesome. But I think some of it is kind of rough, and I think part of it is that a lot of it, especially like the first half, still feels like just an episode of TNG. And watching a movie, I think I just expect something more cinematic. And like Frakes, there are some parts that I think are directed really well, but there are some parts that are just like, this is just an episode of the TV show. This is the house style of the TV show. This is everything that's happening.
That's what you get when you hire Frakes a little bit, right?
Well,
he's like grown up on that TV show. He knows how every director directed that TV show.
Well, apparently he was also very quick. Like, they called him Two Takes Frakes after this movie, which I think, you know, can be good. Like, the movie definitely has a lot of energy.
Yeah.
But I think that, I don't know, I hope that it would be more cinematic. And I even thought that I hope that it would be like more like emotional. Like, yeah, Data has his thing and Picard has his thing. And there's this first contact theme as well. But it still feels like it's not very emotionally rich. Like, there's not an emotional richness between like a lot of the characters. And I think that's something that we like expect from our ensemble dramas, is for them to have like more rich, interacting character lives.
And just for the movie, you need someone to really change or to become different.
Oh, I'll push back on that. I think Captain Picard, his arc in this movie is great, and I love his interplay with Alfre Woodard.
For sure. Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I felt like it was kind of like, let's return it. Like, I don't see him being different in the subsequent movies from this than he was in the movies before this.
I think what this movie is really about is – well, I think the last movie is, you know, kind of about his regrets and him aging and,
yeah,
and stuff like that. I think this movie is about – it kind of connects to what we were talking about, like with the Federation being this kind of imperfect force.
Right.
It's about like him kind of condescending to the past and being like, we're so much better, and then reckoning with the fact that he is still subject to all the flaws of humanity. Mm. And the, you know, he's not above, you know, wanting revenge,
right,
about being traumatized, mm-hmm, of all of these things that are human that can never be evolved past, regardless of how, you know, successful the future might become in terms of, you know, abolishing money and, mm, and having space travel. And Captain Picard has always kind of personified the best parts of the Federation. He's a very ethical man.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that the movie is kind of like him coming to terms with the fact that he isn't above some of the more petty, darker sides of being a human being, I think is really powerful. And especially just like I'm looking at this through the lens, yeah, of like the Picard show coming out and, mm-hmm, and what is this character's journey, not just in this movie, but over the entire series of films up till now.
Right.
And yeah, I think this is like a key part of that.
One thing though, I don't think it's like brought out very well. Like there's lots of stuff happening like in the script, and the script is done by Ronald D. Moore, who worked on, you know, this and Deep Space Nine, and then also, right, to Battlestar Galactica. And there's like lots of dark stuff in there. Like Captain Picard is telling people, oh yeah, if a crew member gets captured by the Borg, kill them. And then at one point he like shoots an ensign who, you know, we see start to transform.
I haven't been assimilated yet. I was just getting coffee.
But like none of it has like the weight that it should. Like he is killing his crew members. He's killing his family, his friends. Yeah. And then like it doesn't sort of,
well, I think
it doesn't
Alfred
have
Woodard,
weight.
Alfred Woodard calls him out for that though.
She calls him out for it. Yeah. But it doesn't have like the like emotional impact because there's just, we just have to get to this point and this point, and then they've got to take this, and then the thing has got to go up.
I don't know, but maybe they don't like call it out as much, but as someone who is assimilated and who is like living through this like PTSD, like you said, like he's not just killing those people, he's killing himself.
For sure.
He's putting himself out of the, yeah, misery of dealing with
yeah,
all these feelings.
Yeah. It's heavy shit. Also,
I mean, don't get me wrong. This is a goofy movie.
Yeah.
This movie is ridiculous and super dated. Like that aesthetic of like the black leather plasticky,
oh, yeah,
outfits with cyborg faces.
We watched Hellraiser not too long ago and it's like, oh yeah, these are space Cenobites.
Right. Yeah. For sure. So you were finding it like a little less than what you thought it was.
Well, yeah. And I just wonder, I just like feel like the best Star Trek movies are the ones that are a little bit more cinematic. And like I saw that they tried to get people like John McTiernan and Ridley Scott to direct this movie. And I can sort of see like how that would work. Like Die,
yeah,
Hard on the Enterprise.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Ridley Scott, not so much. But, you know.
John McTiernan probably went to jail around this time.
Yeah, probably. But, yeah, I just, you know, I would have liked to see more of, like, my favorite guys shot in a way where, like, it feels like a big adventure, where it feels, like, bigger. Like, I wanted to feel something more for all of them. And I think, like, in some ways, it was just too small in scope.
Yeah.
However, like, the Data thing still works. The First Contact thing still brings me somewhere. And Captain Picard as a badass, I think also really works. So, like, those three things sort of save the movie for me.
I see what you're saying. Like, on paper, the stakes are, like, the highest they've ever been in Star Trek. Like, you know, everyone's going to die and the Federation won't even exist. Like, we're going to undo everything. And those are the highest stakes ever.
Yeah.
But, like, it doesn't feel like it.
Yeah, it's just another Tuesday.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, yeah, abandon the ship and then we'll shoot the warp core into the...
Yeah.
But that's what I mean. I feel it the most with the Picard character.
Yeah,
because
yeah,
it's less about, for me, like, oh, I, you know, First Contact is going to be ruined, and more like he is losing it. Like he's giving orders that no one wants to obey because they're,
right,
crazy. And like I'm just so invested in that character that I care more about like his crew respecting him and him maintaining his own sanity.
Well, mm-hmm. So would you, having rewatched like all the kind of major Picard episodes, would you put this up against those episodes? Like, do you think it fits in there?
I think it fits, but like for me, No, I think it's a good movie and I enjoy it, and it's probably the best of these movies.
Yeah.
But I like the episodes of The Next Generation that do get a bit more like experimental or exploratory.
Philosophical.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I mean, one of the big ones, which we talked about the other day on our show, was, you know, Inner Light.
Yeah.
Which is,
I mean,
like,
the
famous
episode,
one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I don't know. And that's one thing that the movies never really did, I guess, because they all had to be kind of big action movies that are going to appeal not just to Star Trek fans, but they could never really allow for, like, one of the things
a
I liked about the show was
as a movie. Yeah.
Yeah, well, it just, like, week to week, you didn't know what you were going to get. And sometimes they were very high concept stories, and we never really could get that with the movies. I mean, even this time travel one is pretty pretty simple.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think the fact that they're such clearly defined A and B stories also kind of adds to the feeling of it being a TV show.
Totally. Yes. Yeah.
But yeah. I don't know. And I think, like I was saying about the Borg feeling dated, I think our watching it now, our perception of how technology is scary has changed. Like in the 90s, it was like the Terminator. It was like someone's going to build robots and they're going to kill us. And now it's like our smartphones are listening to us all the time. Like, this movie should have been like the computer just like goes crazy one day.
Right. Yeah.
So
this movie is so similar to the Terminator now that we like speak about it. Like, she even looks like the Terminator. They go back in time to kill, like.
Well, to me, it feels more like a zombie movie.
Plot.
That's true.
Like, the Borg are just zombies.
Yeah, they're just fodder.
It's the same rules that apply. They're space zombies.
Yeah, they're the Horde. Yeah.
Yeah, I was never even like the biggest fan of the Borg episodes. Like, I actually kind of like it more when they did something a bit different with the Borg. Like, they did that one where they attempted to de-assimilate one of them.
That was a good one.
And that character is going to be in the new show.
Apparently. Oh, really?
Yeah, he's
Hugh.
Hugh, yeah, he's still kicking around.
Huey.
That's awesome. I do like the Borg arc. And I remember that there is even like a, I think it was Star Trek Enterprise episode that sort of continues off something that happens with this movie. Because I guess the Borg sphere, like parts of it crash onto Earth and then they have to go find it or something.
Yeah, the Enterprise really should have taken a week to make sure that no detritus from the Borg ship landed on Earth.
I mean, they're surprised that they didn't go back to the future and, like, you know, it's all Borg planet because, you know, there was, like, one surviving Borg that, you know, just assimilated Manhattan or whatever.
This is a Tim Burton movie. They get back to the present and be like, call coming in from Admiral so-and-so, and it's just, like, a Borg guy in a Starfleet uniform.
That'd be awesome.
So I think we're all kind of in agreement that this is the best of the Star Trek The Next Generation movies.
Yeah. Maybe Generations.
I will say that, that one is...
Yeah, kind of gives it a run for its money.
Well, I think people write it off unfairly. Mm. I think it's very ambitious.
Right.
And it's weirder.
It is more philosophical than this one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It does get a little bit headier.
I read that Whoopi Goldberg was kind of pissed that she wasn't called about this one.
Yeah, I read that
that's
too.
That's shitty.
Because her character has a connection to the Borg.
Yeah. True.
Well, and also she was a big part of the last movie, and it's weird.
And she wanted a paycheck. Like, come on.
She was doing the Hollywood Squares at the time.
So that's it for Rewatchability this week. Thank you so much for listening. If you liked hearing us talk about Star Trek, in particular JM talk about Star Trek, then you can go to your nearest replicator / cell phone and say that you want your T. Earl Grey hot take at Apple. What was it called? Apple Podcast?
I don't even know.
Yeah. You know, if you have an Apple device, you can get this podcast.
Well, you get the feeds out there. You can get it on any device,
there
I assume.
You go. Perfect.
If you guys want to come on, you should come if you're watching the show, too.
Yeah. We'd love to.
Yeah.
In the meantime, you can check out our back catalog at rewatchability.com. You can get T-shirts that JM has designed at TeePublic. You can take those Star Trek credits and put them towards our patreon.com/rewatchability.
We abolished dollars in the 23rd century. We use credits now.
We call them credits.
$5 is one credit.
It's just an arcade. The future is
just
a goddamn arcade.
Cool.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.